joining us now to talk about the NFL and everything around it. A senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. And as always, good friend of the program, he is Charles Robinson. Charles, before we get into the news of the day, how are you doing in the middle of everything that has been going on over the past few days?
There is no better time to be hermetically sealed in your home than if you are a reporter during the opening of NFL free agency. Let me tell you,
I mean, it's
good
point.
Sitting in your office anyway for, you know, 7 to 10 days on your phone, you know, all day long and locked into the internet. So at least for me, there's a little bit of, you know, synergy here. Unfortunately, I wish it was that way for everybody.
All right, so I appreciate that. Let me preface all of this by saying it does seem a little bit strange to be talking about the NFL CBA and free agency and franchise tags in the midst of a global pandemic, but let's get into it. First off, the league did announce this morning that the NFL draft will continue as originally scheduled in April, but there will be no public events. What's your reaction to that, and what is your sense as to what the draft might actually look like this year?
Well, you can see what's coming for the NFL, what's coming down the road. I mean, with the CDC essentially saying, like, you know, stressing that they would like organizers of large events to, you know, basically cancel any events that are over 50 individuals. I mean, the NFL's been rolling toward this. I think part of what's going on with the league right now, in spite of the fact that they went forward with, you know, free agency, I think they're sitting there saying, okay, well, now we have to start to think about OTAs. Are we, you know, are teams going to be able to get together, you know, full squads or bringing in all these guys, working out, having them in the facility, having team personnel in the facility, and not just facilities personnel, but you have to have medical personnel, training personnel, coaches. There's just a multitude of things the NFL is now grappling with. It can't really answer that OTA question right now. It can't really answer, hey, what if we get to the point where, with mini camps further down the road after the draft? What they can control is this one singular event, and they know at this point, particularly with MGM, Wynn, a number of the hotel consortiums and casino consortiums in Las Vegas closing down, we can't have our Las Vegas event for fans. Like, we can't have the fan experience as much as we would have loved to have done this. It's just not feasible, and you know, so they're just cutting that off now. There's, you know, taking that planning element out of the event. And right now what the league's looking at is, how do we make this essentially, it's a TV event now. That's what it will be. It will be for the broadcast audience from April 23rd to April 25th. I don't even think now the league knows exactly how it will structure the event or where the event will be held. That's all sort of going back to the drawing board right now. But I can guarantee you this will be 100% structured for of viewership and an online audience, a television audience, and that's exactly what the NFL is, that's what they're having to give in to right now and then figure out all the other surrounding details with the rest of its schedule in July.
Charles Robinson is joining us. He's a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. One quick follow-up on that. Do you expect prospects to physically be there, or is that still being worked out?
It's fluid. That's fluid. I've been told prospect attendance is fluid. I've been told, you know, typically the way a draft is run, you know, you call in picks. So there are team personnel on location who are literally manning phones and have to turn in a card for you. You know, when you call in on a draft board or a draft war room, you're saying, here's the player we're taking. They spell the name out. I mean, this is literally a process that happens. You spell the name out to the person on the other end of the phone. They turn the card in. You know, so there is some element of infrastructure when it comes to people on the ground, on location. I've been told that's all fluid right now. The NFL is trying to figure out how it could engineer all of this without basically sucking in a massive amount of personnel into, you know, a draft space. And if they were to do that, how could you take the proper health and safety precautions? So if you're doing that just with the personnel to literally turn in the cards or run the event as it's run, I think you have to question whether or not you're going to get prospects involved in the draft and fly them in and whatnot. Remember, this was an event that was once held in hotel ballrooms.
Sure.
Okay, we could be going back to the Pete Rozelle days of literally it happening in the ballroom of a Hilton or some other hotel, and it just be taken back to, you know, the footage you see in the 70s and 80s. So this is wild stuff here for the NFL. Never confronted this before, and I'd say a lot of the lawyers and planners are going to earn their paychecks.
Charles Robinson is joining us. And then Saturday it was announced that the NFLPA approved the new CBA by a margin of just 60 votes. What do you make of the vote totals, and overall, what do you make of that new CBA?
Well, from what I understood, there were nearly 2,500 ballots sent out, and almost 2,000 people voted, which is, I think the final total is off the top of my head, 1,978, I believe, and massive turnout. I mean, that's a significant turnout. I think there was a moment where the union was a little worried. What if we only get 1,000 or 1,200 guys who vote on this, and we have 10 years of a labor agreement locked in by less than half of the membership that we reach out to? Well, that didn't happen. So I think they were happy about that. The fact that it was so close, I think, speaks to really what this deal is. I mean, it is a classic sort of win-loss deal. There are guys at the top of the pay scale who it's not a great deal for them. You know, they don't want to see the 17th game added. They don't want to see, you know, some of the holdout and fining rules that are enacted. They are really frustrated, particularly people at the elite end of the pay scale, with the franchise tag not being touched. So a number of aspects that I think frustrated part of the membership. I think that leaked down into some of the middle class of the NFL that sat there and said, well, you know what, we're in a leverage point here. Why not just take it through the last year of the deal and fight when we have the most possible leverage to fight, which may be in a year. But then there's the other half. You got lower end guys, $100,000 extra a year if you're a minimum salary player. You get to the pension in 3 years instead of four, which means that for a lot of guys, it's now feasible to have an NFL career, a short NFL career, which is really what most NFL careers are, make a little extra money and get to the pension, which is a big deal. I think that's why you saw it essentially be a 50-50 vote. So I think there's relief, though, you know, on the league's part. I think there's relief on some part of the players in the union just to sort of have this done, particularly kind of seeing it go down right in this window when the stock market is swinging 5%, 7%, 10% in opposite directions each day. I think that made guys a little bit nervous about maybe where these TV deals could come in later.
Charles Robinson is a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. Charles, what about the Dallas Cowboys placing that franchise tag on Dak Prescott? You have been all over that story for months now. Is there any surprise on your part that he ended up getting tagged? And then how would you describe the way the negotiations have gone between Prescott and the Cowboys?
I mean, zero surprise. There's no surprise whatsoever that it went down like this. I felt like we kept recycling the same news over and over with Dak Prescott, and the reason why that kept happening was because there was no news. Essentially, since September, you had there was another offer that was extended in March by the Cowboys, essentially restructuring how some of the guaranteed money would work, amping it up a little bit. But Dak Prescott's camp sat there since September and they said, look, we're at our leverage point here. He had a good season. We feel like his value has only risen. And now he's at a point where he's going to get paid on an exclusive franchise tag in beyond $30 million. And then you're looking at, I have to look at what the actual final exclusive numbers are at this point, but going into next season, that's 120% raise over, his exclusive number this year. So he's approaching, $37 to $39 million in a franchise tag next year. There was just no value to them doing it other than mitigating risk. And I don't think they're in the risk mitigation game right now. They're on the betting on themselves game. So that's worked out well for them. I think they're fine with it. The interesting thing was the Amari Cooper negotiation.
Right.
The Cowboys pushed the Dak franchise tag off really until the last minute. And Cooper's camp is sitting there going, the reason why they're doing this is because they want us to think there's a chance they cut a deal with Dak and then they use the tag on us. Was never going to happen. You know, Cooper's camp, Prescott's camp, they're talking. They know what's going on. Everybody involved knew that Dak was getting the tag. So, Cooper will go to the market. But what's interesting is you talk to other NFL teams about Amari Cooper, and a lot of them think that his best deal lies in Dallas, that he's probably going to have his strongest market actually right where he is, even if he does go and test free agency a bit.
Charles Robinson joining us for a few more moments. All right, so what about the Patriots situation? You had a great piece on Tom Brady and the Patriots last week, and it included the following line, quote, when it comes to committing to each other in 2020 and beyond, the communication between Brady and Belichick is slamming into a force field of passive aggression, end quote. Like, on the one hand, it's pretty obvious why they would be passive aggressive with each other, but on the other hand, how did they let it get to this point?
It's in some ways, it's mystifying. You know, I think talking to – I have an individual inside the Patriots I've talked to throughout this, and one of the things – even he, I think, got to the point where he was surprised that it had really elevated to this point. But one of the things that he said to me was, you know, there's a feeling amongst some people in the building that, hey, this is what Tom set up. This is what he wanted. He opted out of his deal. He wanted to get to this doorstep of free agency. So it's incumbent upon Tom to tell us as an organization, the Patriots, what do you want? Like, what do you want, Tom? Like, what do you want financially? What do you need in terms of support? You know, what you need to tell us, whether it's even emotionally, if we're really going to go there and turn this into a session on the couch, you need to lay it all out on the table. Tom wasn't really doing that. Tom was disconnected in the process. And I think that frustrated Bill Belichick. I think it frustrated the Patriots a little bit. And then I think at the same time, Tom was looking at the Patriots saying, okay, let's go. Come on, pursue me. Come at me. Tell me how important I am. Make me these, you know, you need to come and get me. And that's just not the Patriots style. Now, what aided the Patriots is as I think this pressed on, they knew Tom's market wasn't this robust 4, 5, 6 team market that it was sort of played out to be, that ultimately it was probably going to come down to being the Chargers and the Buccaneers, particularly once they found out that Ryan Tannehill, there was pressure in talks by the Titans to get a Ryan Tannehill deal done. And I think they also knew the 49ers weren't going to make a serious run at Tom. So, you know, there's a little bit of gamesmanship that's gone on behind the scenes, but it's still, I don't think it's a good scenario for the Patriots that now Tom Brady can listen to both the Chargers and the Buccaneers and let those teams make their best pitch for him.
So bottom line, if you had to say it right now, how do you think it's going to play out?
Interestingly enough, I think that the coronavirus, not to inject something trite into this whole thing, I actually think that it's something that aids the Patriots potentially re-signing Tom, and this is why. If Tom goes to a place like the Los Angeles Chargers or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, making that change at, you know, he's going to be 43 years old, makes the off-season passing program, the OTAs, all of this off-season work at an absolute premium, because he's going into a new place where he has to learn new people, and there's a new offense being installed. There is a lot of work to be done with Tom Brady from the point he signs into the opening of training camp. Well, if all of a sudden this starts to get put off because the NFL is yielding to necessary health and safety concerns, what does that mean? It puts teams at disadvantages that are going to roll out the red carpet for a two-year window. Well, guess what? Part of your two-year window is about to be clipped by a significant health and safety issue that's sweeping the country. What's the one team that doesn't necessarily have to worry about that offseason program with Tom Brady? The one that has its entire offense curved to Tom Brady for two decades, that's the New England Patriots. I still put the Patriots as being a team, even with Tom Brady allowed to test the market, as being a team that could potentially get him back. But I'll tell you what I think it's going to take. It's going to take Robert Kraft coming in, sort of saving the day and saying, look, we wanted to be respectful of Tom, let Tom do his process, but the truth is we've always wanted him. We got to get him back here. I think Robert Kraft's the one who's got to bring this back together.
I think that's a good thought. I can see that happening. He's a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. He is a co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. Good friend of the program, frequent contributor on this show, Charles Robinson, my guest. Charles, really appreciate that. Good intel. I appreciate that time very much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Jim, and stay safe.
Stay safe. Great to have you back, and I do appreciate it. Charles Robinson.